to the cheaper stuff in the contaminated Flint River, claiming that this could cut some $2 million from the city's budget. Never mind that the corrosive river water caused lead to leach from the city's pipes into the water that every resident uses. For more than a year, Snyder and his agency heads denied that this might pose a health problem, even mocking locals who complained about the foul liquid coming out of their taps. Recently, however, a citizens group called Progress Michigan uncovered internal documents from Snyder's budget department revealing that in January of last year, the agency's honchos were so alarmed by Flint's toxic-laced H2O that they supplied coolers filled with bottled water for their employees in the Flint office. Yes, Snyder's budgeteers were not about to drink that poisonous stuff themselves. A January 2015 advisory from the budget agency's headquarters assured the Flint office that pure bottled water will, quote, be provided on each floor of the Flint office as long as the public water does not meet treatment requirements. This cynical, self-serving move came a full year before nationwide public outrage finally forced Snyder to provide safe bottled water to the regular people of Flint. This is Jim Hightower saying, the Flint water scandal is a perfect expression of the right-wing mentality of self-entitlement. To them, quote, public service means elites serving themselves. The actual public be damned.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members and by Farmstar Pizza, hosting a tape tack overnight February 10th with the Elle River Brewing Company, featuring pint glasses and a variety of the ales. Farmstar Pizza is open for lunch daily with seasonal specials and has live jazz on Wednesday and Sunday evenings at 2359 The Esplanade. Visit farmstarpizza.com and like us on Facebook, where the farm is the star.
The tap water in Flint, Michigan is not the only thing. Stinks and leaves a horrible taste in one's mouth. The governor and his agency heads who caused the sudden appearance of toxics in the water that the
Welcome to Non-Human Radio, where we talk animal rights and veganism every Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. here on KZFR 90.1 FM or online at kzfr.org. I'm Jeannie Trezino.
And I'm Robert Jones.
Tonight on Non-Human Radio, Veganism 101, a discussion of animal rights and vegan basics. We'll also speak with Jonathan Hussein, manager of the International Food for Thought campaign with our friends over at Animal Place, which is a 600-acre animal shelter in Grass Valley, California. We'll talk with Jonathan about his own journey to veganism and get an update on his latest efforts to encourage animal shelters and other nonprofits to adopt more animal-friendly menu policies.
We'll also get Jeannie's vegan restaurant pick of the week and update you on upcoming animal events for the week. Then it's your chance to challenge the vegan. That's right. Ever had a question or challenge for a vegan? Well, now's your chance. You can send your questions and comments to us at nonhumanradio@gmail.com or tag us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. And just a reminder, show notes will be posted on our blog at nonhumanradio.com. But first, it's time for the latest animal rights and vegan news Over to you, Jeannie, in the KZFR Vegan Newsroom.
Thanks, Robert. Our first news item is the announcement last week that Ben & Jerry's ice cream is finally releasing four flavors of vegan ice cream. The four flavors are peanut butter and cookies, coffee caramel fudge, chocolate fudge brownie, and chunky monkey. And they'll retail for about the same price as the cow's milk version. Ben & Jerry's, which is owned by retail conglomerate Unilever, will be making their own almond milk and will be using fair trade cocoa, sugar, bananas, coffee, and vanilla. I checked and they are not yet listed on the Food Empowerment Project's famous chocolate list, so it's unknown whether their chocolate was produced using slave labor. They are a certified vegan by the group Vegan Action, which reviews their ingredients and sourcing and permits the company to use their vegan certified logo, which is a little heart with a V inside. Anyway, this is good news for vegans, for those lactose intolerant folks, and especially for cows. And for those of you who don't know about the Food Empowerment Project list, chocolate list, I'll include a link to it in the show notes over on our blog at nonhumanradio.com. No products are perfect, but Ben & Jerry's tries to be a good corporate citizen, and in general, it's great to have vegan products easily accessible in mainstream markets as opposed to only in health food stores. If you've tried it, I don't know if it's in Chico yet, but if you've tried it, let us know what you think, where you found it, and you can email us at nonhumanradio@gmail.com or take a picture and tag us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at nonhumanradio.
I haven't seen it around town, Jeannie, but I'm keeping an eye out for that.
I looked. I saw some dairy flavors were discontinued, so maybe they're swapping out some of the smaller-selling dairy stuff.
Hopefully they discontinue all the dairy, though.
Our next news item comes from the USDA, who on January 29th introduced a proposed rule to amend the Federal Animal Welfare Act to increase oversight and protection of marine mammals in so-called interactive facilities, which we know as swim with the dolphin programs. The USDA had suspended oversight of these programs back in 1999, and animal advocates have been working really hard ever since to have this agency resume doing its job to ensure the welfare of captive animals ever since. So in July of last year, Senators Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer of California and our federal representatives Jared Huffman of San Rafael and Adam Schiff of Southern California, they called on the Obama administration to ensure that the draft rule, which had already been developed, ensure that it be finalized before his term ended. So the updated rules are now open for comment for 60 days on the Federal Register, and unless something unforeseen happens, they'll automatically become official around the end of March. There are currently some 14 or 18 swim with the dolphin programs just in the United States. So the new rules will include specifications for their enclosure sizes, lighting restrictions, which includes a rule that I noticed that there be at least 6 hours of darkness every night for the animals. So I guess there are some situations where they leave the lights on all night, which is not good for their well-being. There's also water quality testing requirements for coliform bacteria, and the regulations are explicit that the enclosure design must allow the dolphin to exit the human interaction area at will. So this action I see as a clear follow-up to the backlash against SeaWorld and other marine mammal and cetacean captive situations after the documentary Blackfish aired at Sundance in 2013 and then later on TV on CNN.
Jeannie, Blackfish. Did you see Blackfish?
I did not see Blackfish.
You have to see Blackfish.
I know I did.
It's devastating.
I have it queued up on my DVR.
Yes, it's heartbreaking. But this is good news that they're not forcing as many mammals to swim with other mammals.
I think it's just nice that there's oversight.
Yes, and that they get at least 6 hours of darkness. I wish I got 6 hours of darkness a night. Sorry to interrupt. Keep going.
Our final story is about a group called Animal Justice, which is a Canadian group that's been fighting to have ethical veganism recognized in Ontario as a protected human right. The Ontario Human Rights Commission, which is a government agency, recently revised its definition of creed to include, quote, non-religious belief systems that influence a person's identity, worldview, and way of life, end quote. This modernized definition opens up the door for ethical veganism to be viewed as a creed, which then triggers a requirement for employers, public venues like restaurants, and schools to accommodate people who have requirements based on their creed. Animal Justice suggests that a school would have an obligation to accommodate a biology student who refused to perform animal dissection, or an employer would have an obligation to accommodate an employee who cannot wear an animal-based part of their uniform, like leather or fur. And also that an employer would need to make sure that work-related networking events like the company dinner or holiday dinner be held at a venue that has vegan options. Dominique Clement, a sociology professor at the University of Alberta, was quoted as saying, "The idea of veganism as a creed sounds crazy, but keep in mind that there was a time when the idea that gay people and lesbians had a right to not be discriminated against was equally absurd." So I think that's good.
Jeannie, as usual, the Canadians are ahead of us on any kind of progressive ideas like this. So good for Canada. And that's great. Anyway, Jeannie, thanks for that. In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Non-Human Radio on KZFR 90.1 FM, Chico, and worldwide at KZFR.org. So Jeannie, that last news story that you told us about, I was thinking about the relationship between what Canadians called ethical veganism and some other kind of veganism. So I was wondering if maybe for the listeners who might not be familiar at all, maybe we could just, what the heck is ethical veganism? What's going on? Can you fill me in at all on this?
Sure. So I see the different aspects of veganism, which first and foremost is the choice not to consume or wear parts or secretions of animals to reduce suffering of animals.
Right, suffering.
So some people will take a health-based approach to veganism, which is more, you would just call it taking a plant-based diet. And there are lots of studies that show good relationships between abstaining from animal products and eating only plants.
Great. So that would be like sort of like a health-based, nutrition-based reason to become vegan.
Yeah, and it's important to distinguish a vegan diet from a vegetarian diet.
Yeah, that's
so important. A lot of people will be what they call ovo-lacto vegetarians, which means that you would consume milk from some mammal and eggs from chickens.
Ovo-lacto.
Yeah.
What if you're an ovo-lacto pesco vegetarian?
Oh, there's also the pesco. Yeah, well, that has always puzzled me because in no way can a fish, which is what the pesca means, be considered a plant. So,
right.
And the root of vegetarian is veg, which is plant. So
right.
I think that has always puzzled me.
That's puzzling. Especially, I've known people who are ovo, lacto, pesco, pollo, carno vegetarians.
That's
always puzzling. Well,
there's a lot of puzzling things out there when we start to label what our diets are. I think as a baseline, ethical veganism is just acknowledging that animals have a right to a life.
Yes.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that they have the same rights as humans. That doesn't make sense. But that they have the rights appropriate to them.
Great. Well, I'm glad we clarified some of that. And we have more to talk about on these issues. But it looks like our guest, Jonathan Hussein, has just stepped into the studio. And Jeannie, why don't you do a little introduction there?
Sure. We have Jonathan Hussein, who's the manager of volunteer and internship programs and the International Food for Thought campaign for Animal Place, a 600-acre farm animal shelter down south of us in Grass Valley. When he's not recruiting or scheduling volunteers and interns, Jonathan works with animal shelters and other nonprofits to adopt animal-friendly menu policies under their Food for Thought program. Jonathan is a former humane educator in Chicago and grassroots organizer in Fresno, California, in the Central Valley. And welcome to Non-Human Radio, Jonathan Hussein.
Hello, I'm so pleased to be here. Thanks.
Hey, Jonathan. Welcome. Say that again.
I'm very pleased to be here.
We
thanks
got
so
you
much.
On the air. You know, we're flying by the seat of our pants with the technical things, but fortunately, Sue Hildebrand is here to help us. So, Jonathan, I have a question. If you could let our listeners know a little bit about what Animal Place is and what the Food for Thought campaign is.
Absolutely. So, as Jeannie said, Animal Place is a sanctuary for farmed animals. We're also a large-scale rescue, advocacy, and education organization. So we focus on not only giving permanent sanctuary to several hundred animals in Grass Valley, but through our Vacaville Rescue Ranch, we rescue and then adopt out hundreds of animals, thousands every year. And we also do a lot of preventative work. So the idea is that not only are we trying to triage the large-scale, you know, suffering that farmed animals endure, but also to prevent it in the first place through education, one of those programs being the Food for Thought campaign. Food for Thought focuses on the institutional level with cat and dog shelters. So your SPCAs, humane societies. And the idea is that those organizations, which are pillars of animal defense and animal protection in their community, are oftentimes doing so and pursuing their missions at the expense of farmed animals. They're serving cows, pigs, chickens, and their secretions at these events. And so they're sacrificing the interest of farmed animals to benefit companion animals, which is a terrible conflict of interest, and one that we hope to address by providing resources, encouragement.
Great.
Yeah.
So when you say, just to clarify, when you say these organizations are serving pigs and chickens, you mean they're serving
them on the menu. They're serving them as fare at the events.
They're serving cats and dogs in one sense, and then they're serving pigs and chickens in another sense.
Absolutely. Thank you for clarifying.
Good. Now...
Am I correct in that the mission of Food for Thought is to institutionalize these reforms in the governing documents for the group, so in their bylaws?
Exactly. There's plenty of organizations who, because of an executive director or an events planner who is vegetarian or vegan themselves, are willing to organize their events and be more veg-friendly. But it's so important that we work with the board, with the executive director, to formally pass a policy. So yes, that's a very important part of the work, is to institutionalize it, make it a formal resolution, so that no matter what happens down the road, that's a policy that will continue.
Very interesting, because there can be a lot of turnover at humane societies, and so this plays the long game. It probably takes a lot longer to get the resolution passed in the first place, but once it's there for the long, because it's like federal legislation or state legislation. It's hard to undo it.
It does. It takes time, and certainly, you know, it's not. If a board is dead set that in the future they decide to revise a policy, there's nothing preventing them from doing that. But our hope is that enough effort has been put in, and that yes, there is a certain difficulty in changing policy down the road.
Jonathan, I have a question. How does one become the manager or volunteer at a place like Animal Place? What journey did you travel upon to make it to this place?
Well, I began as a volunteer with several well-known animal protection groups. I volunteered with Mercy for Animals in Chicago, first as a humane educator visiting high school and college classrooms, giving talks about the environmental impact of animal agriculture, animal ethics, that sort of thing, volunteering as a leafleter with Vegan Outreach, and eventually founding my own kind of grassroots organization in Fresno called Central Valley Animal Liberation, focusing on really just bringing that message of justice, compassion, and consideration for animals to college campuses, local events. And at some point, I discovered Animal Place, really about 5 years after I began really being active as a volunteer in animal activism. Mm-hmm.
That's great. And you mentioned your work in Fresno, and I'm wondering, do you have any kinds of, I don't know, particular experiences that are particular to being in a small town? You're an animal rights person. You're in a small town in California. There's a lot of agriculture and ranching. Is there anything you can share with how you navigated that?
Well, certainly when I started in Fresno, as far as I could tell, there was really very little groundwork laid as far as animal rights activism. So in some ways that was a challenge, because I felt like I had to start from scratch. But also it felt like I had free rein to really do what I wanted, that all the kind of basic methods of outreach, giving out vegan food samples, tabling, movie screenings, potlucks, protests. I mean, all of that was was brand new. So I felt like even though there wasn't a large group of people ready and waiting to help out, that just knowing that groups like Veg Fund, which will fund grassroots activists and provide them reimbursement for doing vegan outreach events, are a huge help, as well as groups like Vegan Outreach with their traveling coordinators.
Mm-hmm.
Vegan Outreach comes to Chico twice a year, each semester, and we do a lot of good work there. But I'm all on board with all those different types of outreach and education. It's important.
So, Jeannie, I have a question for you. Yes. Would you like to share with us, I believe, and Jonathan, we want you to stay here in the studio. Would you share with us, I believe that you have a restaurant review here in Chico. And since Jonathan is here in Chico, you know, he doesn't come here too often. He and our listeners might be interested. I was wondering, can you tell us a little bit about your restaurant that you're interested in talking about?
Yes, actually, we're gonna go out there and eat later, I think, maybe.
All right.
So my restaurant pick of the week is Aonami Sustainable Sushi, which is a vegan-friendly sushi bar located at the intersection of West Sacramento and Nord Avenue over in the Safeway Shopping Center. The owner and founder is a really nice guy, Jimmy Lee. He offers 10 vegan sushi rolls that go way beyond the boring avocado rolls served at other sushi bars. All of the rolls are listed in a clearly marked vegan roll section of the menu, and all are named after local numbered streets. So you'll find the 1st, the 5th, the 32, and 99, which are a lot of our main thoroughfares here in Chico. And one of my mainstays is the 1st, which consists of sweet tofu, cucumber, and shiso leaf served with a wedge of lime. It's a really simple roll, but it's really innovative. I haven't had it at any other sushi bar in California. Then there's the I-5 that is a beautiful roll. It combines pineapple and tempura onion on the inside and then topped with avocado and shredded beets and miso mango sauce. It's really, really beautiful to look at, and then you get to eat it all. And then the rolls also there are, all of them are generously sized. You get like 6 to 8 pieces per order, and they're I find them to be reasonably priced. So, yeah, all the rolls are really creative, beautifully presented, and delicious. And then if you flip the menu over, you get the non-sushi kitchen items, or hot items, such as a miso soup, which our vegan listeners, all listeners should be happy to know, is vegan and made from mushroom broth and miso and no fish flakes, which is kind of like, if you've ever been to a restaurant, a Japanese market, and seen the bonito flakes, it looks a lot like fish food. So I'm glad not to have that in my miso soup. And also it's really nice not to have to quiz your server about whether or not there's fish or God knows what in the broth. So it's just, it's vegan. They can't make a mistake. It comes to you vegan. All the vegan non-sushi items are marked with an asterisk, which is great. One of my favorites there is the vegan yakisoba, which is a Japanese-style fried noodle dish with mixed fresh veggies and salted pickles. And they also offer a delicious tempura-style shiitake mushroom appetizer, which is so good.
I'm getting hungry.
Yeah, really. And also, for our vegan listeners, the veggie tempura batter is vegan. They don't use any eggs in their batter. And then they have some other fun stuff, which is like their edamame appetizers, which come in lime and salt, chipotle, and garlic flavors. And they're grilled, and they come to you warm on the plate. Really nice. So Aonami's open Monday through Saturday. They're closed on Sunday. They're open for lunch and dinner. And the particulars are they're located at 1008 West Sacramento Avenue in Chico, and you can reach them at 530-924-3168.
Thanks, Jeannie. And Jonathan, can I ask you, if people are interested in finding out more about Animal Place and finding more about what you're doing, is there a website? How can we get in touch with you?
You better believe there's a website. AnimalPlace.org is our main page. We also have a separate page for the Food for Thought campaign. That's Food for Thought campaign, all one word, .org.
Great, great. So, Jeannie, what do you think about, you want to give some, go through our little calendar here before we wrap up things?
I sure will. There's a number of cool events that we can, that folks can attend in the next couple of weeks. The first one will be tomorrow, the Chico Animal Rights and Education Series, which is known as CARES, C-A-R-E-S. We'll be meeting tomorrow night, Thursday, February 11th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Midtown Local, which is located at 365 East 6th Street in Chico. The CARES Short Essay Reading Group provides a forum to discuss short essays on animal rights and topics like the commodification of non-human animals in the context of industrialized food production. That's a lot of words for talking about factory farming, industrialized agribusiness. All members of the community, and I'm totally serious about this, vegans and meat eaters are welcome to attend. We'd like to have a healthy dialogue. This month's reading is an article titled Veganisms by my co-host, Robert Jones. CARES meets the second Thursday of every month at Midtown Local, and it's one of the many valuable community programs actually supported by the Chico Peace and Justice Center, which is great. We love the Chico Peace and Justice Center. For a link to the article or for more info, contact me, Jeannie, at chicovegan@gmail.com. And you'll also find a link to the CARES reading at nonhumanradio.com. And did you have anything you wanted to add, Robert, about your article?
Oh, it's about different kinds of veganism.
Okay.
You may not know that there are different kinds of veganisms, but I am enumerating them in this article, and I want people to show up, and I really need feedback, because this article is supposed to come out in a book this year, and if it comes out as it is without input, it's not going to be as good. So please show up and criticize.
Yes, I hope that there'll be a healthy dialogue. The next event coming up will be Dharma Voices for Animals. The Chico chapter is holding its monthly meeting on Saturday, February 13th at 10:30 a.m. till about noon at the Sky Creek Dharma Center located at 1423 Marauder Street in North Chico. Dharma Voices for Animals meets monthly to discuss the relationship between humans and other sentient beings in a Buddhist context. For more information, contact Sherry Morgado at sherrymorgado@gmail.com. That's sherrymorgado@gmail.com. Or you can give her a call at 570-6704. 570-6704. And finally, there will be a free screening of the documentary Cowspiracy, The Sustainability Secret, on Tuesday evening, February 16th, next week, at 6 p.m. at the Adventist Community Center up in Reading. This is a film that follows the intrepid filmmaker Kip Anderson as he uncovers the most destructive industry facing the planet today and investigates why the world's leading environmental organizations are too afraid to talk about it. Luis Cihoyos, the Oscar-winning director of The Cove, which was a shattering movie, calls Cowspiracy the most important film ever made to inspire saving the planet. This screening, the Cowspiracy screening in Reading, is free and is hosted by the newly formed group Plant Empowered Reading and is organized by Dr. Michael Nelson. The Adventist Community Center is located at 1356 East Cypress Avenue in Reading. And for more information, go to Facebook and look for the group Plant Empowered Reading.
Jeannie, thank you. Well, let me say this. Non-Human Radio is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR members, and the Downtown Chico Thursday Night Market is celebrating its 20th year. Applications for vendors and certified producers are now available at downtownchico.com. For more information about the market, summer concerts, and how you can help keep our downtown beautiful, clean, and safe, contact DCBA at 345-6500 or visit downtownchico.com. Well, this is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Well, look at that. We blew through that 30 minutes. It's time for the end of the show, but let me thank Jonathan Hussein for coming from Animal Place, our engineer Sue Hildebrand. Jeannie, thank you. We're on next week, same time, same place. Correct?
That's right.
And remember, go vegan.